everybody. This is Patricia Corey. The show is Beyond the Matrix. We are taking you out of that box of conventional thought. I was describing this today to my graphic artist who wanted to find out how to draw this, and I said, think of convention. Sticky, cloying, closed, stuffy. Think of beyond that. Open-minded, soaring with the eagles, open to change, open to knowledge. And that's what we're trying to do on this show. And we're going to do it tonight, alla grande, as they say in Italian, with Stephen Bassett. He is a leading advocate for ending the 62-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding the extraterrestrial presence that's engaging the human race. You know this is one of my big subjects. Gee, since I was a kid, I was talking about ETs, and people were saying, put that kid in a box. But here we are. The time is upon us. Before I bring Stephen on, I really recommend you pay attention to what's going on. Check out the crop circles that are coming down, the big jellyfish formation that is mind-blowing, 600 feet long without a crushed footprint in there. Check it out on cropcircleconnector.com and start thinking about what these messages mean. Pay attention to the fact that there are sightings all over the planet almost every day now. In England, there was just a sighting of about 50 craft coming over the horizon, 16 at a time. Whoo-wee! It's an exciting time to be alive. And with that, I bring on Stephen. Hi, Stephen. Thank you for coming on the show.
It's great to be with you again.
Thank you, Stephen. And I want to blow people out of the water here. So you know me, and you know that's what I do. And, boy, I know that's what you do. So let's pull no bars, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going to talk about so many things that you're up to now, the million facts, disclosure. We're going to bring people up to date on all the hard work that you're doing to blow the lid off this ridiculous, what do we call it? Secret.
We call it a truth embargo. Let's give your audience just a quick perspective.
Okay, you do that.
What is truth embargo? Truth embargo refers to the formal effort policy of the government instituted in the late 40s, I think it was fully in place by 53, that the reality of that the phenomena that had turned up, which we call now the UFO phenomena, which is a very, very crude term to describe that, but it's what was in play for a very long time, that reality had to be embargoed. It could not become consensus reality. And they did this for national security reasons. And it's hard to argue that it was illegal. It certainly wasn't illegal. So that's why I don't call it a cover-up. The fundamental act of embargoing this was not illegal. The time period was extraordinary. The Cold War was starting to shape up. There was huge concern within the government, both in the United States and in our allies, that, of course, the Soviet Union had gotten the bomb secrets from their own spies. We had withheld those that program for them, so that was probably a mistake on our part, perhaps, but obviously didn't instill any trust between us and the Soviet Union. But the ideological break was there. They had German scientists, like we did, who were passing on the missile development secrets. And we were going to build missiles, we were going to build bombs. It did not look good at all. And in the midst of that, they have extraterrestrials literally climbing out of the sky. They had known that something was afoot during World War II because of the Foo Fighters. I think they already probably knew that there was an ET presence at that time, but they couldn't do anything about it. I mean, we're in the middle of a war. What are you going to do if your planes are being tailed?
We certainly don't want to interrupt a war for something as important as extraterrestrial.
It probably would have been a good idea if they did, but they didn't. And so they made the decision that, look, until we understand what's going on here, until we maybe, they did have technology by 47, at least, they might have had it sooner, from a vehicle that had crashed or more than one vehicle, maybe shot down. So they had technology that needed to be understood. They had to deal with this issue, and the intention, I'm sure, was at some point they would let the people know. They needed to know more. So they embargoed this. It wasn't a pure secret.
Hold on, just a minute. I want to make sure everybody's on the same page. When you say they, you're referring to the United States government?
I'm referring to the government, the U.S. government, the military, and the people inside a government that are have to deal with our national security. It couldn't be a secret because these craft were flying all over the world. I mean, so what are you going to do about that? So you can't, what you had to do is maintain it, control it. All right? So this was a far more complex and difficult task, and it ended up being successful, and it was a truth embargo. So that's what the truth embargo is about. Embargoing really the acknowledgement of this issue, as real to the people, with the intention undoubtedly of revealing it at some later time. Then what happened was the Cold War just got worse and worse. As you know, there was the crisis in Berlin that led to the Berlin Airlift. There was, of course, the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62. The Vietnam War gets underway a few years later. We're fighting a war on the border of China. Of course, China had nuclear weapons.
We never stop having wars. Let's just make that clear. Is there ever a time on this planet where there's no war?
Not that we can recall. I mean, humans have been at war with themselves since the flood, and eventually went to war with the planet itself. That's what we do. That's how we roll. But the Cold War got worse, and so they felt, I'm pretty sure, that bringing the ET issue out and acknowledging the ET presence, while 10,000 nukes were pointed at each other across the polar ice caps, was probably risky, too risky. Could destabilize what was already a bad situation and lead to some paranoid preemptive strike. And so I think a decision was made, I'm just guessing, but it's a good guess, that until the Cold War was over, this could not come out. And so they had a very powerful motive to maintain the truth embargo aggressively, and they did. Disruption of research, disinformation, planning of false stories, intimidating activists, misrepresentation, you name it, they did it. And they had unlimited funding to do that, and they, of course, had the license to do it as part of the defense of the United States against the Soviet Union. So the truth embargo meant that the truth embargo was not going to break until the Cold War ended, which ended in 91, formally on Christmas Day, believe it or not, here at least, when the Soviet Union formally, the Communist Party formally dismantled. So at that point, the potential for disclosure dramatically increases. That was now, say, 18 years ago. But it was not simply a simple matter, meaning, okay, oh, the Cold War's over, I guess it's time to tell everybody about the ETs. They needed time to get their ducks together, their ducks lined up, and their act together, and all that. And there were already, we had post-Cold War issues. And then there was another important fact, and that was, I think the military intelligence community was very concerned who the president was. This will be the biggest event in human history. It has global implications, unlike probably anything that's come down the pike. And the relationship of the president to the military intelligence national security community, the capabilities of the president, will be fairly important here. And so who the president was mattered.
So let me interject that it's a good thing that we didn't have disclosure during the Bush term.
You're getting the idea here, yeah. The irony is that what happened was,
but man,
yeah, George H.W. Bush would have been fine. He was like the quintessential insider national security president. He had all the credentials. He had all the connections. He was perfect. And I think they, in fact, started to. I think they started to plan to do something. In his second term. The Cold War ended in the middle of Bush's first term. The Kuwait War started right thereafter. It was just not possible to get it done in his first term. I believe they were thinking of getting something done in his second term, which would have started in 93. And I think that's why certain things sort of loosened up around that time. I think Corso emerged shortly after that, wrote the book Roswell, Day After Roswell. Bill Burns wrote the book for him. But unfortunate for the disclosure process, Bush did not win the second term for reasons that are not fully understood. There's been a lot of theories. They think Bush's health had gone bad, but it wasn't publicly acknowledged, and he simply wasn't.
Well, he did fall off the platform in Japan.
Well, we know that happened, but
yeah, that was really pretty devastating for his presidency, even though it was underplayed by the media. It really did raise some flags. I mean, he fainted.
It was an embarrassing moment, but we'll attribute it to food poisoning. Near the end of his campaign in 92, he was not on his game. He lost to Bill Clinton, and one of the great ironies of history, that Bill Clinton was exactly the opposite of George H.W. Bush in terms of his relationship to the national security structures. They did not want him. They did not like him. They even despised him. So Clinton.
How do you know this information?
Oh, it was in the news. It was all in the news at the time. You had members of the military openly castigating the president. The military had to send out memos saying, you know, it's actually treason to openly castigate the president while you're in uniform in front of your troops. He was viewed as a pot-smoking womanizer, draft dodger. He was just anathema to the military intelligence complex, and they wanted nothing to do with him. The first thing he did when he got in was to move to try to overturn the ban on gays in the military, and they came back at him very strongly on that. He was going to get no slack at all, and so he was the last person that they wanted. He was viewed as a leftist and a liar. And remember, the intelligence community develops complete dossiers on anybody that gets near the White House. A lot of people don't know this.
Of course.
In other words, let me explain this. The only qualification you have to be president is to be 35 years of age and a natural American citizen, born in American soil. That's it. You don't have to pass a national security test. You don't have to get a pass. You don't have to get you don't have to have a national security clearance. That's it. And so, as anybody who is in contention to be president, they start collecting dossiers on them, background and what have you. And of course, that we're talking about the full might and force of the U.S. intelligence community. These dossiers are never to be used, right, unless national security was absolutely a threat, meaning if they were to do a background check on a candidate in the election and discover that this person had molested children but never was caught, it's very possible that that would come out. But it would take a lot. So these dossiers are collected as a matter of national security, and they are never to be used. However, the people that collect these dossiers get a lot of information about a candidate, and so there was a lot known by the intelligence community about Bill Clinton when he came in. I have a hunch that they broke protocol and shared some of that information with the right wing that went after the administration almost immediately, because for a reason we can talk about later. But in any event, Clinton could not be the disclosure president, and so every effort was to remove him from office. It didn't happen. He won another term. So essentially disclosure was off the table for the 8 years from 93 to 2000. And then we had a new election and a new president. And some people may be shocked to hear that George Bush was not acceptable either. The military intelligence community was not going to let George Bush be the disclosure president.
No, you've got to repeat that because I didn't get a little interference up front. I want to be sure I understood what you said.
When Clinton leaves office in 2000, and we have an election, some people might be shocked to learn that George W. Bush was unacceptable to the military intelligence community to be the disclosure president.
I did, in fact, notice a bit of sarcasm there.
It's not really sarcasm. It's a matter of fact. I'm just stating a fact that George Bush did not have the background, did not have the skills, did not have the intellect, in their view, to address this issue. He had gotten into the office primarily because of a liaison he had made with the evangelical right, Christian right, that started while he was working on his father's campaign. His father had no interest at all in the right, Christian right at all, could care less. George did, and he embraced them. And this has all been written up. It's all well known. And there was that liaison that helped get him in office. the only asset he had in terms of national security credentials was his father. And in fact, he was at breach with his father almost immediately, and that breach got worse and worse as he moved toward the Iraq War. Disclosure was off the table with George as president, and the Democrats, though, felt surely that they would win in 2004, and I believe the Democrats made a decision in 2001, right around there, that when they got back into power, they would get this done. Now, what am I saying here? This is what people need to kind of grok. Most of the people in government today that have high positions know there's an extraterrestrial presence. All right. The fact that they don't tell you, the fact that they don't issue press releases or talk about it in front of microphones doesn't change that. These are smart, intelligent people. They're connected. They have, the higher up you go, the more connections you have with the military, with the intelligence community.
Right. So and what you're really saying here is the military and the intelligence community are who run the world, not the presidents.
No,
so
I'm not saying
that. They're the ones who are
doing
policy.
That. The military intelligence community has a major role in the running of the United States, and they have impact on other nations, though that impact has diminished profoundly in the last 10 years. A lot of people run the government, right? But it's kind of a group deal.
It's not up to the United States alone to make this disclosure. We've got governments all over the world that have their own investigatory networks that could also be coming out. So isn't there a higher body to whom they answer?
Most of the first world governments know there's an extraterrestrial presence. Now, what do I mean by this? Does that mean that everybody in the United States government at a high level has been taken to hangars and shown bodies and crashed vehicles? No. Have they been given extensive briefing? No. Are they aware? Yes. Have they figured it out on their own? Yes. Have they been tipped off? Right? You don't have to be shown bodies and craft to be tipped off. It's like, hello, John, let me, in case you didn't know, that ET thing, it's real. All right? Just for your own edification. Right? And so there is this very extraordinary disconnect between reality and perception. So people think, this is a secret, everybody's in the dark. Not really. They know it's true. The ET's presence is pretty well known worldwide. But we haven't acknowledged it yet. We're in this purgatory. We're in this transition period, and it reflects this disconnect. It reflects how powerful this is. This we've gotten used to this. We've seen aliens on TVs and movies for decades. Most people sort of understand it's true, but it's still a big deal. It's easy to forget how big it is, and so this transition to an open acknowledgement of ETs is a big deal, and it's taking some time. It's taken too long. So by the time George Bush becomes president, it's already, 10 years after the Cold War is over, and the citizen movement to bring this issue to a head is picking up steam. It's growing. The disclosure movement is becoming more powerful. Witnesses are coming forward. More books are being written. Documentaries are being done. The web comes on board. The UFOs.
More very, very authentic people, credible people, like astronauts like Edgar Mitchell, who's been on my show, and a lot of military people, credentialed people are talking about crafts, seeing them and in detail, not just people that are dismissed as having had too much pot, you know?
And one of the reasons they're coming forward is that, again, that principal barrier to disclosure, that a logical and perhaps appropriate basis for maintaining the embargo, the fact that the Soviet Union and the United States were always at any time on the threshold of a nuclear war, was gone. And that people felt that they had wanted to talk about this. They wanted to get it off their chest, as it were, and they felt they could now. Not everybody. The majority still, most everybody's under some kind of a national security oath or understanding or agreement based upon their position that they're not allowed to talk about this. Some are not. So it's not everyone, but a small portion, a small percentage started coming forward. Their numbers have grown. So the pressure on the embargo was growing constantly from 2001 forward, in particular. But again, the president was not acceptable. And so here's the situation we're in now. The Democrats made, I think, a decision that when they got back into power, they would do this. Well, they just got back into power. It's now 18 years after the end of the Cold War. The pressure on the truth embargo is now worldwide and enormous, coming from many directions. The truth embargo is basically being shredded. The government really stopped what I would call formal intervention, I think around 99, late 99, meaning formal efforts to disrupt, intervene, intimidate, plant stories, this kind of stuff, stopped around 99. I think because they knew that something could happen at any moment, another country could break ranks, and obviously you didn't want to be caught in flagrante, deliberately screwing around with this issue, so it's best to step back. And in some respects, the embargo then moves on from 99 under its own massive momentum, right? So it's 2008. The Democrats come to power. We have a new president, Barack Obama. And what that means is that the window for disclosure at that point opened is wide as it's ever been since 1947. We were on the threshold, and it could happen at any moment. This is what your audience needs to understand.
Now, this is what I've been telling people without all the detail that you've shared, but certainly we can feel it. I mean, there's so much tension in the air with regard to this huge reality that's just breaking. I mean, when you hear about, fleets of craft coming over the skyline and, I don't know. I think that okay. Well, then you're saying that you think Barack Obama. Sorry, I have trouble pronouncing his name. I don't mean to be rude. Let's President Obama.
Yes.
Is the president who is going to disclose?
I think it would have happened even if Hillary Clinton had won. I think it would happen even if John McCain had won.
Can we backtrack just a minute? What about when John F. Kennedy? The story goes that he said he was going to bring the truth to the American people about a week before he was assassinated.
Well, there is some substance there that Kennedy was thinking along these lines.
Apparently, he issued a memo.
There is that memo is out there. It's you have to read between the lines in that memo. But let's just say that. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Kennedy was making a move, and let me add that there was no way in hell it was going to happen. I mean, they're not going to allow, the military intelligence community was not going to allow the truth embargo to end in 1962.
So
does that mean that...
That might have something to do with the reason why he was assassinated?
It's possible, but it's pure conjecture. We just don't have the evidence. As we know, there were a whole lot of people that had a whole lot of reasons to end his presidency, and so who knows what the ultimate criteria was. So now let's get to the present here. My colleagues and I, our job is to watch all this very closely. And so not surprising, we're sort of like the people up on the crow's nest of the ship. Our job is up there to look for icebergs. Now, the people that are down in the ship, in the restaurants and having dinner, maybe in the casinos playing a little poker, or sunning on the deck, they're not looking for icebergs. It's people up in the crow's nest. So we're going to see them first. So it's not surprising that a lot of things I'm saying here, and we'll say, some people will be going, why do you know that? I don't know that, or I haven't felt this. That's because our job is to pay attention and to look.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about your organization so that people, when they say, "Well, who are they?" Who are the people? When you say "we," we know that you are an activist, a lobbyist, a columnist. But can you tell us more about your organization and?
Well, there's a disclosure movement underway. It involves a lot of organizations and a lot of people. All right, and one of those organizations is Paradigm Research Group, which I founded in 96.
Mm-hmm.
And its sole goal, right, it's fundamental goal. There's a mission statement there, and it explains what it was due. But its fundamental goal was to advocate for the resolution of the UFO issue politically, the political resolution of the UFO issue, which is disclosure. I mean, that's you don't without disclosure, you have not resolved this issue. At least you haven't begun the resolution of this issue. So we've been at it for 13 years. And along the way, network with a whole bunch of other groups. And if you go to paradigmresearchgroup.org, you can find links to these other groups and organizations and projects and initiatives. There's scores of them. I've helped to build the network and network with other groups. This is a movement, but it's in cyberspace. It doesn't have a big office in downtown Washington. We don't get hundreds of thousands of people and bring them into to the Capitol and march up and down the mall. Very difficult to impossible to do now. It costs too much money. And this is not an issue that motivates people in that way. It is a movement that is built in cyberspace where all political movements will be built in the future. And
okay,
so it may seem
that for people that are
not
listening.
I'm sorry.
I was just saying, let's repeat that for the people that are in listening. It's paradigmresearchgroup.org, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
And that's a portal to a number of sites, including the Political Action Committee, XPAC, my PAC, and the ExoPolitics World Network, ExoPolitics United States Network, the X Conference, and the Million Facts on Washington.
Okay,
and then
well,
once you
people,
get inside,
I would suggest that you don't go there now because you might get distracted. You can check that out at the end of the hour. Stephen, go ahead. You're up on that crow's nest observing.
The disclosure movement and the people that are advocating are watching what's going on. And what I have to tell you is based upon what's going on, that we are right on the threshold of finally disclosing this truth to the world. But it's not a guarantee or a fait accompli. So one of my contributions to this was to create a project called the Million Facts on Washington that was planned in early 2008 at the very beginning of the more formal campaigns. It was based on these premises. One, that it looked like whichever candidate won the election, disclosure was that they were going to be probably acceptable. And the further the year went along, the clearer that seemed. Obama, Clinton, or McCain would have been acceptable. And secondly, this was going to be the longest, most expensive presidential campaign in history, involving scores of candidates, scores of debates, huge amount of political coverage. And so the ET issue is much more mature, so the idea was to get that issue into play, get it into the coverage, make it hook it to the coverage of the presidential election itself, hook some of the candidates to the issue, which legitimately, and really get it out there, even including getting questions asked of these candidates about the UFO ET issue, which actually happened. It didn't happen until September, but it finally happened. So we accomplished that. The other thing was to continue to build the disclosure network to make it stronger and as powerful as possible. And a lot of progress was made there. And that was prologue to the Million Facts on Washington, which was then launched in October to start on November the 5th. And the concept is very simple. There's going to be a new president. We need everyone to send that new president a fax, an email, a letter, calling for that president to resolve the issue, to support hearings, demand a full briefing, bring out the technology, right? Get that technology out of the government labs where they have been working on ET tech for 60 years. We think the physics there could be incredibly significant in addressing the problems that we have, and of course disclose itself. And get those letters in during the transition, the 77 transition days between the election and the inauguration, and that to have that happen. Thousands of letters, faxes, and emails went into the transition headquarters. Then phase two was launched to then redirect that correspondence to the White House starting on January the 21st for the first 100 days of the administration, that legendary 100 days, but it was extended to 131 days through May 31st because the administration's plate was extraordinarily full the day they walked into the White House. And so the correspondence then started coming into the White House, letters, faxes, and emails. And that went on and right until May 31. The White House has yet to comment on this, but we expected that. Now, that kind of set the stage, right, for the third phase, which started a couple days ago, June the 1st, the critical phase, the point of all this. Everything going back to 2008, everything that was done on this issue in all of 2008 that PRG was involved in, led up to June the 1st, to what's happening right now. All right.
Okay.
Now, something else we did after the election was over is using the media as the conduit. We got a message to the White House that was pretty straightforward. You need to end this truth embargo as soon as possible in your administration for three very important reasons. Right. One, if you don't do it, very soon your name is going to be on it. And this is going to be your embargo, as it was the president before you and the president before him and the president before him, going back to Truman.
Right.
And when that happens, you have a problem. Not the least of which is that not ending this truth embargo will completely put the lie to a major pillar of your reformist agenda, which is open, transparent government. It will destroy it and wipe it out. So you have a serious issue here. You need to do it. All right. That's reason one. Reason two is that we have been told every day for quite a while now that we are facing enormous global crises, economically, humanity-wise, in terms of threatening wars over water and food and dying children, poverty and the terrorism that it generates, climate and environmental crises, and the solutions are meager, and all manner of dire consequences are being tossed at us. Some people call it fear-mongering. Some people call it reality-based thinking. Whatever. The point is, we have got to have every club in the bag if we're going to par this course. So we have to have that technology. The ET technology cannot remain sequestered behind the truth embargo. So, and the embargo get the tech. And then third, and this may be the one that gets their attention the most, that it's clear that other nations are breaking ranks with the U.S. on the ET issue. They're not willing to go along with us, follow our lead on this much longer. So if our government does not disclose the ET presence soon, I think there's a better than 50-50 chance another nation will do it before the end of the year and will basically be irrelevant.
Well, this is what I brought up with you earlier, the fact that the United States certainly doesn't have a
Well, our credibility and our world esteem has fallen dramatically in the last 10 years, and it's really been falling since Vietnam, and it's been eroding. But up to Vietnam, our prestige in the world was extraordinary.
Yes.
Right. The Marshall Plan successfully defeating fascism, staving off the communist threat, all of these things, we emerged to be the defender of freedom in the world, and enormously powerful, enormously respected. And from Vietnam forward, it's been eroding. The last 10 years, it basically fell off the cliff. So our ability, there was a time when America said jump, the world said how high. That ship has sailed. And so,
what I was struggling to find a minute ago was that we do not have the exclusive on the ET story. So, unquestionably, the number three scenario of your list, all of which are brilliant, really brings urgency to the question. And that is,
well, it does if you care. If it matters to you if the U.S. is first on this, it will be one of the, if not the greatest political legacy of all time. In other words, whichever administration is behind, unless a number of countries were to get together and toss this to the UN and have the UN do it, which I just doubt.
Oh, God forbid.
It's not going to happen.
That is, not a very exciting alternative considering what little gets accomplished in the UN. Stanton Friedman was on my show recently as well, and he was talking about disclosure, and he said, what we really don't have is a person who can speak for the human race. And it's not the President of the United States, and it's not any of the, from what I see, any of the governmental leaders of this world. Nobody has the chutzpah, for lack of a better word, the greatness to represent the human race to
I don't know if anybody
the
ever would.
Possibility of confronting another whole species.
Well, let's don't think in terms of a person. There's 6 billion people on the
Let's not think of the UN either, because it's just too ineffective. So who have we got?
Well, that's the point. The UN has been diminished and undermined, and is not properly positioned to do this, though it would be appropriate. And so it's going to be a nation. A nation will start. And the question is, will it be the U.S. or not? Some people, it's a huge political legacy, and that whichever nation does this first, it will be highly significant.
To say the least.
But there are some pragmatic reasons why the U.S. would probably do this. For one, we have lost enormous respect in the world, and we have broken trust with the people. And the only way you can get that trust back is by getting in the truth business. And so if the U.S. ends the truth embargo, this will be a huge step forward in normalizing the social contract in America and our relations overseas. In other words, okay, we have kept this from you, but now we're telling you. If another nation does it, well, we get all the downside. We were the ones that withheld this for 60 years, and we're not the ones that brought it out. So it's going to diminish the U.S. a lot, and it's going to make it difficult for us to lead on this issue. And I think, if the U.S. gets its act together, it could lead and lead well on this issue. So there's a case to be made for it. But frankly, in the long run, it's not going to matter, right? The planet's going to learn about the ET presence one way or the other, and down the line, it won't matter that much which nation started it. But short term...
In fact, I wanted to ask you at this point, let's depoliticize the question just a moment and talk about the human race, because whoever is the announcing party, that announcement will have to have been generated by some big event like what I think is coming, which is, of course, conjecture, but... I envisage just massive sightings simultaneously all over the globe where there's no refusal, there's no conjecture. I mean, there's like 50 that would just appear in England, 100 here, 100 there. I think this is coming. And whether or not we've got a politician that knows how to appropriately make these announcements, it looks like the human race is about ready to be confronted with this reality.
Well, let's
So what happens, in your opinion, Stephen?
My position on that is fairly clear. The greater, I mean, this is a tricky sentence. The more dramatic.
Now you know how I felt when I was back stuck on exclusivity.
All
right,
look, you gotta have to let me do this.
Okay, go for it.
We don't want a traumatic disclosure process.
Right.
More traumatic the disclosure process, the more destructive it's going to be. And so this idea that, well, we need some mass sightings, craft everywhere, to drive the government, right? This is not good.
That's not what I meant.
Well, no, but again, we need the government to do this in a proactive way, without being driven to it by the fact that the ETs are becoming dramatically aggressive in terms of what they're doing up there. Let's take the classic example. They park a mothership over the Capitol, 2 miles across, whatever. I guess that's the ball game, isn't it? And that's the worst case scenario, because essentially the government is intimidated at that point into disclosure. It looks small. The violation of the social contract has now been made completely plain, and if not broken. And so the perception by the people is that the state is perilous. The state has violated the social contract and is now being cowered into telling the truth by a massive mothership hanging over the state. This is incredibly traumatic to the relationship between all peoples and their government worldwide. It would be very destructive, and it would create a much more problematic post-disclosure period. And so we don't want that to happen. Now,
right, but on the other hand, there are other scenarios of arrival, one of which is not a menacing mothership over the Capitol sending down death rays, but
no, I didn't say
more
it was sending down death rays. I just said it was sitting there.
Oh, okay. I just, you know, I have a tendency for drama.
Yeah.
What I'm suggesting is that more and more sightings, which are happening now, are continuously appearing so that people are starting to get used to this idea and
right.
nobody is refuting it. The governments are no longer saying, you know, you're hallucinating. We're getting more press leakage
right.
that this is possible, or that the military did recognize this as a viable UFO craft. And little by little, it appears that this is a joint effort, in a sense, that we're getting more more sightings. There's more press coverage of it as a tangible or at least credible experience. And it looks like this could very well be a process of gradually preparing people for this reality.
Well, it looks like it is. That's exactly what it is. Now, whether it's joint, whether that's planned, or whether it's simply concomitant, we don't know. But yes, that's what's going on. They are being seen, and that helps to drive the terrestrial process of disclosure.
A lot of military people are coming out and disclosing what they've seen. Now, if there was still this heavy-duty truth embargo, they would probably not be allowed to do that. So it looks to one like there is definitely an attempt to start leaking the truth out and preparing people for the big day when we get the official word.
Whether it's intentional preparation or whether it's simply inevitable part of the process, we don't know.
Uh-huh.
But we do know that the disclosure process is underway. I'm trying to make the point that a dramatic event needs to be avoided, right? We want to avoid the over-dramatic kind of threshold event that is ET-driven. We need this process to be as much terrestrial as possible. The ETs seem intent on helping this along by being less than discreet in their comings and goings. And, you know, putting a crop circle down in England is kind of a nice little nudge. So that's where it is, and I hope it stays that way. But the ETs can do what they want to do. If they want to lose patience and park motherships over capitals, they can do that anytime they want to, and there's not a
I don't think they want to do that, or they would have certainly done it by now, no?
Again, you know, if everybody's patience has a limit. There may be a reason why. I happen to believe there is a reason why disclosure has to happen now. I believe it has to happen pretty soon, and it's very possible the ETs feel the same way. So if we continue to drag our feet, if we continue to find excuses to put it off, there may be a time factor here, and they may be forced to do something dramatic. And again, that would be bad. All right.
Are
now,
you
this
talking
is
about
a complex,
time factor, meaning the condition of the Earth?
Who knows?
Well, you just said I have my own idea of why.
I have an idea that it's, but I don't. I can't say specifically what. We are up against the wall in a lot of areas, but I can't point at one of them and say, well, we have to disclose by a certain time. I'm simply saying that I sense a time delimiting factor here, and if that is the case, then at some point the ETs may have to act. Now, this is a very complex argument. And not many people are going to get this, and it's all right. That's okay. The point is this. The sense of urgency is clear amongst the First World nations. I don't think anybody can deny that. There is a powerful sense of urgency that has emerged on a collective basis unprecedented in history, where you have scores of nations and billions of people who are appropriately, and not on the basis of manipulation or fear-mongering, have appropriately been in a heightened state of urgency regarding the status of the human race and the planet itself. This is really a profound thing, right? It's profound when any large number of people have a certain similar sense on something, right? Because humans are unbelievably diverse in their opinions. But right now, you've got a whole lot of people. We have their attention, and their attention is focused on the fact that we are running out of water, we're running out of fish, we're running out of air, we're running out of ice caps, we're running out of ozone protection, we're running out of time. And, of course, we still have 20,000 nukes that could still be used. there's a sense of urgency. So that's there, and whether that sense of urgency is appropriately connected to this whole ET trajectory, I don't know. But my guess is it is, and that this.
Well,
is not
I just want to point
accident.
That I'd like to interject here, and that is that there are a couple of points. Number one, that we don't glorify the ETs into being the next saviors that are going to save us from ourselves.
Correct.
Because a lot of people are moving into that mindset that, okay, great, well, any minute now the motherships are going to come in and pluck us off and we'll go destroy another planet.
Right.
So I like to focus on the idea that we're not looking for saviors to come, but certainly we need assistance because we're really not doing a very good job of planet management.
Yeah, think of the good analogy is to think of the Earth as an adolescent, about a 13-year-old, and the principal job of the parent is to get the kid from 13 to 20 without the kid killing herself or himself, or ending up in prison, or a drug addict, or whatever, all the other awful things that young adults can get into because they don't know better.
And the other
in other words,
point,
they have enough.
This emphasizes my next point, which is as long as we're a self-extinguishing society or civilization, it's a whole question of philosophical discussion of whether ETs might want to intervene to help us or save us or whatever. But at the moment when we become a violent, very dangerous planet that can dramatically affect the horizons beyond the planet, then this is another point of interest for intelligent beings that are outside of our realm.
I don't really think we have the ability to affect much of anything outside the planet. So I'm not really on board with that thinking. But we certainly have the ability to screw the planet up. And I suspect that, and it wouldn't surprise me at all, that sentient life, wherever it exists, once it's relatively advanced, has a pretty powerful appreciation of a biosphere. When we see the planet from space and all that, we are moved by that, and that's a legitimate emotional reaction. What originally was a heaping ball of magma and gases billions of years ago, is now this air-covered, water-covered blue dot, this incredible place where life thrives. And we know that while there may, in fact, be billions of biospheres in the galaxy, that's a recent statement by some scientists in Britain, it's a big galaxy. So this is still a fairly extraordinary, special place, as would any biosphere be. And I believe that sentient life would have a certain appreciation of that. And so the destruction of that biosphere would be something that they would generally not like, oppose, whether it's from
right.
the media
and
or
the destruction of that biosphere would affect them because everything, I'm sure you agree, there is interconnectedness and oneness throughout the galaxy, throughout the universe. So anything that would destroy a planet will certainly have repercussions beyond our immediate space, beyond our immediate biosphere.
It's a nice sentiment, and it could well be true. I don't know. That's not my area of expertise. But in any event,
but you're saying that
clearly
the ETs would be concerned about Earth events.
Earth events, and the evidence for that is fairly overwhelming. So, but exactly what the basis of that, what the motivation for that concern is, and where that concern is going, we don't fully know yet. But nevertheless, they're here. They're here at a rather interesting and critical time. I don't think that's an accident. So there's the setting for what's about to happen. So
okay, you just mentioned earlier. You said something. You made a quick comment about the crop circles, and I would like to ask you how you feel about the crop circles as far as what they represent, because, of course, we have many different opinions about that as well.
What they represent, I don't know. My opinion is, my view of the crop circles is fairly simple, that when this thing got really underway in the early days, they were predominantly extraterrestrial. Then over time, the percentage of crop circles that were made by humans grew until now there's a balance, and exactly what percentage is human and what percentage is extraterrestrial is hard to know. So it's become very complicated. But at the same token, almost in a way, symbolic. Whether it's intentional or not, it's almost like there's a dialogue going on between humans and extraterrestrials in the the crops of England. That location, I don't think, is an accident. And the one message that I get from crop circles, and it's an extremely important message, that it's the most dramatic and compelling evidence that we can look to that would point to the fact that the ultimate outcome of this is not going to be bad. That we will be relatively pleased with the post-disclosure reality and even formal contact. That whatever these beings, whatever their agendas are, individually, in the collective, they're not destructive, right? It's like in a neighborhood. You've got some nasty, destructive people in there, but the neighborhood in the collective is a nice place to live. So, I think crop circles is the best thing we've got there, and I think that's what I turn to when I worry a little bit, because there's evidence that there's some unpleasantness coming. How bad will it be? We don't know. But the crop circles are a good indication that it's not going to be so bad. That's as far as I go there. But it's a wonderful phenomenon, and I really kind of envy the people that are involved in it, because it's, I think, so much more satisfying, and it's a very emotional kind of thing. I remember it this way. I'd much rather be a crop circle researcher than a cattle mutilation animal harvester researcher.
Definitely.
For obvious reasons.
I go every year into the crop circles. I'm going soon again. The crop circles that have been coming down this year are just enormous. I think I sent you a picture of the one that's 600 feet long, the jellyfish one. Did I send it to you?
Yeah, pretty impressive.
That is a very impressive crop circle. There's not a footprint or a broken stalk anywhere near it.
Was it confirmed? Were they able to confirm that was an overnight circle?
I can find out for you. I thought this was came down during the day, but I will research.
Well, even whatever, 24 hour. I mean, it sometimes they know because of who's around and who's in the area and what have you, and sometimes they don't. But if that's a 24 hour circle or an overnight circle, that's almost certainly extraterrestrial. It would take a team.
Yeah, it is.
There's no question to me
from the point of view of the impossibility of the magnitude of this thing. And I'd like to just remind people to go and look at this thing. www.cropcircleconnector.com. I think it's when you click on 2009 crop circles, you'll see it under June 3rd or May 29th. It's in Oxfordshire. So take a look at that. 600 feet of crop circles with all of the sacred geometry that's in there. The tail of the jellyfish is in Fibonacci sequence, for those of you who know what that is. And, you know, if these are humans doing this, like you said, it's wonderful. We've got a dialogue going on. It's not unlike Close Encounters of the Third Kind when they do blast, and comes the big dom 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 dom. It reminds me of this when I see little crop circles that humans are making supposedly to respond to the ET or extra dimensional ones that are coming in. But this is a really powerful one. It's really an amazing thing to see. I think the farmer is going to mow it right down. So take a look at it on the internet.
Here's what needs to happen now. We need to wrap up the truth embargo. We need to end it. And the government, I think, plans to do it, but the government's famous for getting clay feet, losing their nerve, and things happen. Somebody blows something up. So we've got to ensure this gets done. And so the final phase of the FAF in Washington is designed to do that. So here's where we're at. We're going to bring the hammer down in a way. In phase three of the Million Facts on Washington, we shift the focus now from the White House to the White House press corps. And so when you go to factsonwashington.org, what you find is now all the information necessary to direct correspondence to the White House press corps in care of the White House Correspondents Association, the WHCA. Perfectly nice address, fax number, and email contact page, all there. Send this information. Now, what do we want heading their way? And it's already started, by the way. Two things. One, everybody that sent a letter to the president about disclosure over the last 200 days or so, needs to copy that letter to the White House Press Corps, care of the WHCA. I sent this to President Obama. Here it is. All right. So they need to get lots of these so that they have tactile proof in their hands that the White House is getting this correspondence. And secondly, we need everybody within the sound of my voice, whether they sent a letter or not previously, to now write a letter, note, email, fax to the White House Press Corps through the WHCA saying, okay, now we want you to start asking about this issue. We want real questions. We want real answers. You need to start immediately. And at the factsonwashington.org website, you will see a menu of questions, 15 carefully selected questions that are hooked to the political realities of our time, that are hooked to members of the administration and what we know about their connection to the issue, with links supporting all of this, documents, the research of Grant Cameron at presidentialufo.com, video clips, the works. There's a ton of stuff there that backs up every one of those questions. In other words, this question is kind of, we know the answer in a way, but we want the administration and we want people in the administration to respond. They have never been asked these questions. That's why this thing keeps going. If even a handful of press were to ask these appropriate questions and require an appropriate answer, it would quickly escalate into a media firestorm and burn the truth embargo to the ground.
You're right, but of course, plenty of media people are afraid to ask the questions until they know they're allowed to ask the questions. If you get
well, that's what we're giving them. We're giving them permission. So what you're doing is you're saying to them, you know, we need 10, 15, 20, 30, 40,000 letters going in here. And I've already talked in the last 4 days to probably 6-7 million people. So it's a question of whether they want this truth or not. I mean, if you don't really want to know whether there's an ET presence, if you don't want this acknowledged, if you don't want that technology, if you want to keep paying $6 a gallon for gas and watching the world fall apart around you, then don't do anything. Just go back to your television. But if you want this truth out, if you want the government to get back in the truth business, if you want to know about the ETs, if you want that technology available so maybe you'd be paying a couple of dollars a month for your air conditioning bill in a short while, in a few years, then you need to write a letter to the press corps because this is the final phase here. What now?
If you want to live the magic of being the civilization that finally globally recognizes that we are not alone,
Yeah. Do
something about it to make this happen now. And I have to close this conversation because we're out of time. So I'm going to ask you again, if you want to help Stephen and the millions of people that are supporting him to get this word out, you contact him at www. Stephen, you want them to contact
you? The website you need to go to is factsonwashington.org.
Factsonwashington.org.
Yeah, facts.
Get out of your armchair. Stop waiting for somebody else to do it for you. Help people like Stephen, who are the truth fighters in this world, and let's get the truth released so we can get on with what that means as a civilization to finally recognize we are not orphans here. There is a bigger design, and we are in time to be part of this. So
and let's do it before something bad happens and interrupts this whole process. Somebody's going to invade somebody.
Bad happens, but what else? You know, I mean, plenty of bad things happen.
Sure.
Let's see a new horizon for humanity.
Yes.
And for the planet at large.
You got it. I really appreciate your helping with this. I appreciate your audience's involvement. I look forward to seeing some of their letters because I know they'll be copying me, and it's just going to be great. We're right on the threshold.
I'll get on my website too. So once again, everybody, I've been talking to Stephen. Oh, Stephen, I'm sorry, I just went blank on your last name.
Stephen, executive director of Paradigm Research.
Stephen Bassett, I'm so sorry, executive director of Paradigm Research. I got all emotional and all excited about what it means to be one of the civilizations that really experiences this intergalactic connection, and I lost
this is a big deal. Believe me, this is a really big deal.
It really is. Stephen, thanks again for coming back on, and you know you have my support, and whatever you need me to do, I'll do my best to do it. Everybody, please contact Stephen, help him, help everyone who's struggling getting this very, very important part of our lifetimes, our reality out the public. Okay, I've got to shut off here. One quick message for all of you who have been waiting. I am finally coming out to the West Coast. I'll be appearing at the Body, Soul, Spirit Expo in Vancouver October 23rd, I'm a keynote speaker. And October 25th, I'm offering my DNA workshop there. So you can find out more information about that by contacting me, of course, at info@SyrianRevelations.net. And you know my site is www.SyrianRevelations.net. My books are published by North Atlantic Books. I've got a couple of new ones coming out. They're going to blow your socks off. And that will also include information that I've had tonight with my very, very important guest, Stephen. Thank you. Don't forget, you have a choice. You can keep your head tucked down in this gooey mass of grid and indifference and silence and ignorance, where everything is safe and you don't have to think, or you can soar beyond the matrix in the free thought zone like an eagle, open to everything that is the potential of being alive in this great galaxy. It is your choice to make. But you'll be with me next week as we do that very thing here on Beyond the Matrix next Thursday. Stephen, arrivederci.
Arrivederci, Ben.
And I'll be in touch. Ciao, everybody. It's been intense. Write me your comments at info@SyrianRevelations.net. And any information you want to get back to Stephen through me or directly, you now have the source. Do it. Love you. Ciao, Bella.